Ladies and gentlemen, I've told this story on the pod before, but now I'm going to get to say it to the man's face. When Witch Doctor was announced, I flippantly turned it away. Whatever. A book welcomed into the new Skybound imprint, a creator under the ample wingspan of Robert Kirkman, and an opportunity for somebody else. Nah, I don't deal in that sort of lead. Jealousy is probably an instinctual response. At least I'm honest about it, I guess. And I certainly didn't tweet all over the net my brainless green envy. But the first taste of Witch Doctor was then offered in the back of The Walking Dead. And again, damn it, it's harder to bag and board those books when they're fat and full of great comics that I didn't write. But I begrudgingly read the Witch Doctor addendum. I gotta tell ya, I loved it. Within pages, name panels, I was converted. Sometimes you just have to get over yourself. Now, to be honest, my initial reaction actually only lasted about 3 seconds, but those moments were long and inky in their insane depths. Once it passed, I remembered that Brandon Seifert, as well as nearly every comic creator, wasn't navigating the stars purely to set my compass off true north. He was most likely just a guy, a great guy looking to make comics. Hell, he was probably a lot like me. I'm a great guy looking to make comics. Why would I hate myself? It was then I learned to stop worrying and love Witch Doctor, and love Brandon a little bit too. Now, the book hasn't steered me wrong since. It's got sick laughs and the craft is magnificent. And so I guess today it gives me fantastic pleasure to discuss the process with Brandon Seifert. Mate, how are you going?
I'm pretty good.
Excellent. And of course, Curtis Weeb is with me, my co-host. How are you today, Kurt?
Doing really good. I've been excited about this this podcast since we had a chance to really briefly talk in New York. So I'm glad we could finally sit down and do it.
Good. Me too.
Excellent. Now, Brandon, as you can tell from my intro, it may have sounded a little backhanded, but mate, I am loving Witch Doctor. I am absolutely loving Witch Doctor. And the interviews that you gave early on, I remember reading some stuff on CBR, completely sold the concept, but also further past the high concept, sold it as going to be something really good. And it obviously earned its place in Skybound. So I want to make sure that that's clear. I am a big fan.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, actually, the second or third podcast we did, I think it was, Ryan, where Witch Doctor was my pick of the week. And yeah, it was one of those things that I kind of approached it with hesitancy, too, just because, yeah, you know, it was getting a lot of hoopla around. I'm like, you know what? The guy at my local shop said it's really funny, so I checked it out, and it was definitely something I enjoyed as well. So congrats, man. That's a really great book. You have a lot to be proud of.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Nice. Well, we want to pick your brain today about the process behind everything, and we'll certainly get into Witch Doctor, but we want to really see how you get things done, Brandon. So, I mean, obviously origin stories are always really good, and we should look at yours. When did your interest in writing really begin?
Honestly, that's kind of difficult for me to pin down, because even when I was a little kid, I wasn't necessarily writing, but I was telling stories. That was the appeal of fiction and media for me, was that I could take these these characters and these things that were really interesting and play with them myself and come up with stories about them. So when I was really young, I did that with He-Man and the Masters of the Universe and Ghostbusters and stuff like that, and came up with my own stories and came up with my own characters. And that sort of turned into, as I got older and I started actually writing some of it down, it sort of turned into fanfic before there was really a term for that. Nice. In junior high, I was writing, I was writing Star Wars fanfic in junior high. Not really very much of it. I've always had, I've had some difficulty with completion. It's always much more, you get to the stage where it stops being as fun and starts being harder, which is the part where you actually write it down and have to figure out how to make it work.
Yeah.
And, traditionally I'd kind of let that get in the way of actually doing anything with it. By junior high school, I was writing my own stories. And even before that, honestly, I was writing comics. I was writing kind of Ninja Turtles ripoff comics with my best friend when I was in fourth grade. And we'd both write and draw our own comics, and he was actually a good artist. He did not draw it at a fourth grade level, but I definitely did. And didn't really end up pursuing the art, which I think is probably for the best. And then I kind of, when it came to comics writing, I kind of got into that through journalism. Because I did arts and culture journalism for a few years, and that was when I really started actually honing my craft and learning, getting some idea of what I was actually doing, And then that's translated surprisingly well into comics.
So that was you kind of, when you were through your high school time, you were looking towards a career in writing. That was something you always had an interest in.
It was kind of not all that consciously. Like when I was young, I used to, you know, I used to wonder, like there'd always be this thing where I'd be like, I wonder what I'm going to do when I grow up, except I know I'm going to be a writer. Like, I wonder what career I'm going to pursue, except I know I'm going to be writing novels at some point. So it was always this sort of like, this sort of thing that I wouldn't really accept and wouldn't really pursue that much. But I knew that, like, I've always just kind of intuitively known that, like, writing was the thing that I was most interested in, and that someday, sooner or later, I'd actually get around to doing something with it.
Was it one of those things where you sort of understood you can't just leave high school and be like, oh, I'm going to be a writer, man, and that may not pay the bills, that may not feed you sort of thing? Were you sort of thinking about making sure you had some sort of B career on the side?
Yeah, it always, like, you know, traditionally I've pursued a lot of things that just weren't very practical or weren't very reasonable, and I was always very aware of it. Like in college, for most of my college career, I was a theater major, but I knew that wasn't going to go anywhere. Like I knew I had no delusions that I was going to go off and become a successful paid actor. Partially, you know, I didn't feel I had the talent for it, and I knew I didn't have the dedication for it. And it was the same kind of thing with writing until I started doing the journalism, and until I started, you know, like taking journalism classes and having all the teachers be extremely impressed by my work and say, you should go do this. That's when I kind of was finally like, oh, you know, maybe I can do this after all. Maybe this is a reasonable thing to do.
Were there any sort of cornerstone writing moments in sort of your high school, late high school career where you can think of a piece of work you handed into a teacher, like a specific one that got praise, or a project that you worked on in the background that it came to a bit more fruition than just sort of dabbling?
Not really in high school. I didn't really apply my writing to school that much for a long time. I was never a very solid student. And in high school, I'd been really into comics when I was in junior high. And then in high school, I got into role-playing games. And so like the bulk of my writing in high school was writing role-playing game supplements, because, you know, there again, it was this sort of thing where the primary appeal of the games to me was not actually playing them. Like I never ended up getting around to playing them, because that, you know, that required like coordinating with other people and, you know, and going out and actually doing it. Whereas the thing I found really rewarding was like sitting at home and, you know, coming up with new ideas for these things and the writing, you know, coming up, you know, creating new characters and creating new kinds of characters and settings and things for this. And that's really when I did enough of that in high school that I got my writing to the point where it was, you know, kind of a near professional caliber. And so that when I started doing journalism in my early 20s, the first journalism class I took, I didn't have any of the prerequisites. And the teacher, after he saw one of my writing samples, decided to waive all the prereqs. And then halfway through the class, like halfway through the semester, he found a job for me in another city at a newspaper and told me that I should quit school and go take it right then. And I was like, yeah, and like, that's awesome. But for me, like, that was horribly intimidating. I was just, you know, I was just sort of like, what? No, I can't do, what are you talking about? That's, I can't do that. I don't know what I'm doing. So
when you were doing, you said you were writing for role-playing games, were you actually getting paid work then? Or was that just for your own, you and your friends?
Oh, that was, yeah, no, there was no paid work for that. At that point, it was just all things that I'd write up and put online and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I kind of, you know, I kind of got out of it shortly before some markets kind of opened up for that at that time to start getting paid or start getting, you know, attention from the companies that I was interested in.
The reason I ask, and I don't think I've ever mentioned this, and even in my interviews or any of the podcasts, my first actual published work was with a role-playing game company. And that was in, I think, like 2005 or 2004. And it was for Fantasy Flight Games.
Okay.
And yeah, and I asked a few of it as well, because the pay was something like, it was 2 or 3 cents a word. It was atrocious.
Okay. Yeah.
That's some old time Dickens pay there. That's awesome.
And honestly, yeah. Like, if we're going to talk about, my journalism that I was doing a few years ago, honestly, I wasn't making that much more. I guess I was making probably like, maybe 10 cents a word. But it was for really short articles. So I do, I do a 400 word article and get paid $40. And it was difficult to even find, articles like enough, I couldn't easily do articles that were substantially longer than that. And then even doing those, it just took forever. So I kind of, I was not a very successful freelance journalist. So I'm kind of glad that the comics thing came along and saved me from that, because it just, honestly, it wasn't really going anywhere, and I didn't have the dedication for it to really pursue it. And freelancing is an incredibly large amount of work. And, I love comics in a way that I never loved, newspapers or magazines. But even with comics, being a freelance writer, I'm still a ways away from being able to make that pay. So,
yeah, you've always been a comic reader?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I loved comics when I was a kid, and then I really got into them in junior high, which was actually right around the founding of Image. And I was like, I was a huge fan of the early Image titles. So it's kind of, honestly, it's a little bit surreal to be doing, I've done a couple panels with Rob Liefeld. And yeah. Like somewhere inside, there's like the 11-year-old who's just like absolutely beside himself about that.
Where did you do that panel? Was that in New York?
I did one in New York, and I did one in San Diego.
How did that go for you? How was your very first panel? How did you feel about that?
Oh, I'm not sure what my, I guess my very first panel was, my very first panel at an actual convention was when Skybound had just gotten announced. And so it was at San Diego last summer. And Robert pulled us up on stage, pulled me and Lucas up on stage, and had us talk about the book. And that was honestly like I find I'm more comfortable like on stage at a panel and talking in front of like the entire crowd than I am like asking a question at a panel that I'm in the audience for. I don't know why, but I'm much more comfortable when, when the focus is supposed to be on me, like I'm okay with that. But if I'm like, if I'm standing up and drawing attention to myself by asking a question, like I get stage fright for that. So yeah, I don't know. It doesn't make any sense.
I've got to tell you, man, I'm interested. You talk about being sort of a storyteller. That's the base of where all your sort of narrative comes from. Being a storyteller, you could be writing comics, novels, podcasts, plays, TV shows, anything that you like, theater. What drew you to writing in comics?
I don't know if I've really got, I don't know if I have a very satisfactory answer for that. It's just sort of like comics are the one thing that I've been really, really passionate about as far as like different forms of storytelling goes. I like TV, I like movies, I used to be really into theater, but none of those, for whatever reason, none of those I find very appealing to write. Whereas comics, I've always wanted to write comics. It's just for some reason, like that form, that way of telling a story really resonates with me. And I'm not really sure why that is exactly.
No, that's cool. It's intuitive. That's good. It's mysterious. I like that answer. Now, if we can segue into Witch Doctor a little bit, obviously that's the big breakout hit at the moment for you. Do you want to tell the audience just a little bit about what Witch Doctor actually is?
Sure. Yeah. So Witch Doctor is a horror medical drama starring this sort of, brilliant jerk doctor in sort of a, Nikola Tesla, Howard Hughes, you know, Dr. House MD vein. And he is investigating the biology of the supernatural, trying to come up with, basically, he's looking for what we always call it is, he's looking for a vaccine for the apocalypse. So he's studying, you know, all the monsters that were traditionally kind of disease metaphors. So he's studying, you know, vampires and zombies and werewolves and demonic possession and all this stuff. And then all the monsters in the book are crossed with actual stuff from biology and medicine. You know, they're all crossed with elements of real diseases or parasites or stuff like that. Which is honestly like, it's kind of a weird premise. And I'm very glad that it has been as successful as it has been, because it's, you know, it's a very niche kind of idea.
It's a really good high concept that certainly I think grabbed a lot of people from the outset, and it obviously grabbed the publishers as well. But there's also a lot of parts and pieces that make up what the book is. I'm wondering, like, what was the initial sort of germ of an idea that drew you into this story?
Back around 2001, I always used to do this sort of thing where I wouldn't end up writing anything, but I'd do a lot of like sort of the pre-writing, that you do before you actually start, you know, writing a story down. And so I was having all these ideas for these different things that I could do that I never actually got around to doing. And one of them was, I was looking at things like Doctor Strange, and I was looking at things like, Professor Van Helsing in Dracula, and just this sort of, you know, there was just this sort of idea of the doctor who fights monsters, or the doctor who investigates the supernatural. But I wasn't ever actually seeing that, I felt, done justice. You know, Professor Van Helsing acts like a doctor until the vampire is actually introduced, and then he's just, you know, he's just sort of like, okay, you take some wooden stakes, you know, and kill it. Like, there's not there's not really much doctory stuff going on. And it's the same kind of thing. Like, I've always wanted to like Doctor Strange, because he's got a really good kind of high concept, which I kind of stole for Witch Doctor. and I'm, you know, I'm very kind of upfront about that. Like, I know what bits of my work I've gotten from other things, and Witch Doctor sort of owes a lot to Doctor Strange, but it owes a lot to the fact that I don't like Doctor Strange. And I feel like, you know, I feel like this could be this really interesting, compelling character with a really interesting way of approaching things. And he's just always been presented as this sort of generic magician, with a lot of 60s trappings that I've never been able to get behind. So Witch Doctor, kind of like the initial idea was kind of a reaction to that stuff.
I think your main character is, obviously you can see where there are sort of, if you'll say, sort of outline similarities with Doctor Strange, but internally I think your character stands miles apart from Dr. Stephen Strange in the way his personality works and the way he goes about things. I've never seen Dr. Strange shake a baby with such vigor.
It's definitely like the character. You know, when the book first got announced, a lot of people were like, oh, well, that sounds like a Doctor Strange ripoff. And I'm like, well, yeah, it does sound like a Doctor Strange ripoff. But if you read it, I don't think, you know, I know that the way we portray this stuff is nothing like something that you'd see in a Doctor Strange comic. And I don't think the character really has that much in common as far as, you know, how he approaches things, or, you know, what he's going to do if you put him in a crisis, or, you know, kind of the trappings of his personality.
I'd never actually drawn really a correlation between the two characters, to be honest. I mean, okay, Doctor Strange seems that to be so I'm, so formed. Yeah, you, yeah, you're totally succeeding, because yours awesome. Seems more grounded in this pseudo-reality, the sort of Richard Matheson I Am Legend medico-realism behind the concepts, whereas Doctor Strange is flat-out mysticism. Mm-hmm. And yours obviously draws on elements of that, but... I'd personally just never really put those two together. I see Witch Doctor as being, I mean, obviously it was sort of sold as House MD, but with monsters, and that's probably the easiest way to encapsulate it really quickly in one sentence, but it's still very different to that.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, that is something that, you know, you saying that means that I'm doing my job right. Because, you know, it does owe a lot to things like Doctor Strange, and then also things like House. even though I'd actually, before I started writing the book, I'd never seen an episode of House. I just sort of, yeah, no, it's a lot of my writing is very inspired by things that I have no firsthand contact with. So they're sort of, it's sort of inspired my, by my ideas about what yep. different things sound like. So yeah, in that case it was, you know, I had always liked the idea of the jerk doctor. And that's like everywhere, every medical drama ever has the jerk doctor. Yeah. And then House was the one that, you know, took him and made him the protagonist. And like, I love that idea. So when we started doing this, I was like, and you know, the doctor has to be a jerk. Cause otherwise, what? You know, if he's nice to people, if he's a doctor and he's nice to people, what's interesting about that?
Yeah.
Like there's
I suppose nobody drew the correlation to Scrubs and Dr. Cox. I mean, Scrubs with monsters would have been way more interesting.
Yeah. I might actually like it if it had monsters. yeah, we've gotten compared to, you know, we've gotten compared. I think one time somebody called us Trapper John MD meets Supernatural. We get compared to a lot of stuff.
I take the first half of that with pride. That's awesome.
Yeah.
it's not quite Doogie Howser MD though, unfortunately.
No, not quite.
Yeah. It steers too far from that. You go pretty far back with the artist, Lucas Kettner, correct?
Ish.
On a few things, or tried to get some things off the ground before Witch Doctor, had you not?
Well, what we were actually trying to get off the ground was Witch Doctor.
Okay.
We started working on the series back in late 2007, and it was just something that we were self-publishing and trying to find a publisher for a couple years, and then Skybound picked us up. So we haven't actually done anything besides Witch Doctor together, and I hadn't really known him before we started working on this project. So, I mean, at this point, you know, it's been 4 years that we've been working on
this. Yeah, that's a very long gestational period.
It's a while. And it doesn't really, in some ways it feels much shorter than that. In some ways it feels much longer.
Were there any points where you gave up on the book?
I don't think there were any points where I actually gave up. There were points where I kind of wondered if I should, because we started self-publishing it and put out the first Witch Doctor short story in mid 2008, and that was right before the big economic crash. So we went from getting a lot of interest from publishers to the same publishers saying, "Well, we love it, but we don't have any money." So sorry. Yes. And so it was like there were a number of experiences where I felt like we were really, really close to getting signed somewhere that just kind of fell through. In one case, like we got interest from all three of the major independent publishers, and one of them, who wasn't Image, made us a deal, but it wasn't a deal that we could actually take, because it was entirely back-end pay, and Lucas couldn't afford to do the book without some sort of money.
Yeah, I can't imagine Brandon getting the project so close, so ready to sort of publish, and then having to sort of step away from it. That must have been a pretty tough decision.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't really... That was right around when we were starting to get interest from Robert. So it was... At that point, it definitely felt like it was just a temporary setback rather than something too major. But if it had happened, you know, if we'd gotten... if we'd gotten a deal from somebody that we weren't able to take and there was nothing else on the table, I think that would have been pretty crushing. And there were definitely times when I wondered if maybe, you know, we should just go off and do separate things or try to come up with another project to pitch to people, and let Witch Doctor sit for a little while.
How did you end up getting it into Robert Kirkman's hands? What was the,
we didn't, the chain of evidence we had nothing to do with it. He actually found a completely unrelated piece of Lucas's illustration work online, which was wow. It was for there's a weekly newspaper here in Portland called Willamette Week, and they'd had Lucas do this cover leading up to the 2008 election of Barack Obama as like this Harlequin romance hero, and somehow Robert found this because this turned into kind of like a little internet thing after this cover came out, and Robert saw it somewhere online and liked the art and looked up Lucas and then found Witch Doctor through Lucas's website. And so we just got out of the blue, cold email from Robert Kirkman, preview night of Comic-Con 2009. And it was just like one line long. And it was, he said something like, do you have a publisher for this? Book looks good. Image would be interested. Robert.
Oh, that was man. It.
And I get that. And I'm like, what? And, double checked that it was actually him.
Sure. Yeah. Nope. Not just like Image as an entity, but Robert Kirkman.
Yeah. So.
That's it. So every single person with a paper trail online right now is just sitting by their inbox.
Yeah, no, seriously. I feel like that was the best thing that we ever did for the book was when we started self-publishing it, we did small print runs that we could hand to people, but then we also put it online for free. And then I just pushed the hell out of it all over the place. I pushed it a whole bunch on Warren Ellis's forum, ended up getting, a lot of attention there, and a quote from him. And then just tried to get people to look at it constantly just to get it out there. And we actually got a lot of response from that by itself.
That sounds like a really good system. I mean, and that's what you've got to do with your early stuff. You can't slap $3.99 on it and hope people are going to find their way to it. You've got to really shove it in hands.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, when we self-published the individual issues, we do print runs of 200 copies, and each one would cost us, around $1.50. And then we'd sell them for $2 just because we were trying to get them into people's hands. And then a lot of the point of that was, so we'd have a hard copy that we could give to editors. So basically it was like a calling card to editors that was subsidized by selling the other issues at conventions and stuff. And I do there are definitely things that I feel like we could have done better in this process and I could have done better, but the way that we set ourselves up when we were looking for a publisher, I think is a really effective way to go. And I definitely recommend it.
What was that first issue? Was it just a self-contained one-shot?
Yeah, it was basically that same story that you read in the back of The Walking Dead. It was we completely rewrote it and redrew it and released it as Witch Doctor Zero, but it was that same vampire short story.
Yeah.
So where did you meet up with the artist? Where did you find him?
Lucas and I are both from Alaska, and we both live in Portland. And Alaska is a very small town, and Portland is a very small town. So it was pretty inevitable that we were going to run into each other sooner or later. And in retrospect, after I met him, I realized these other circumstances. I'd seen his band play one time, and there are just all these instances where we encountered each other without actually knowing we had. So then we met for real at a concert. And then we ended up getting paired up by a weekly newspaper that we both worked for, because I'd done a cover story for them, and they hired him to do the cover illustration. And I really liked how it turned out, so I kind of got in touch with him, and I was like, hey, nice work. And I saw him at another concert, and we started talking about comics. And I was like, I've kind of always wanted to write comics. And he's like, dude, I've always wanted to draw comics. And I'm like, well, do you want to make a comic together? And he's like, well, I don't know about that. And crushed me. Absolutely. He doesn't remember this, but he crushed me. And then he was like, honestly, I've got a lot of stuff going on. I'd be willing to talk about it. Get in touch with me, after the summer, because it was May. And then right around when I was planning to email him about doing a comic together, I ran into him at a bookstore in town. He was like, oh, hey, I've been meaning to email you. Do you want to do a comic together? And I was like, all right, it's on. Let's do this. And then we were just going to do, honestly, we were only going to do a portfolio piece. We were just going to do a 16-page done in one story that we could both use to try to get other work in the industry. But then the thing that we came up with as the thing that we do for that was Witch Doctor. And really quickly, we were like, okay, no, this is really good. We could sell this. People are into this. Why don't we just do this?
So the actual story of Witch Doctor, you guys created together then?
Yes. I mean, we co-created it. It was based on ideas that I had that were sitting in a notebook. And so, like, it was definitely, like, I came to him and I'm like, okay, so there's, you know, this doctor who investigates the supernatural, and he's got magic powers, and he's got, you know, he's got the sword, and we'll have this joke where he's like, scalpel, and his assistant hands him Excalibur, and he says, thank you, just like completely nonchalantly. So there was a lot of stuff that was definitely like in place in my head already for it. But then there were a lot of other things that were just kind of nebulous that it really, you know, I don't know. I definitely would not have fleshed them out the same way without, you know, if I hadn't been working with him on it.
I think I can definitely tell, you know, that there's, you know, sometimes you can just tell when a comic has a real connection between the artist and the writer. You know, sometimes they still do a really great job, but it's really obvious if the team is working together and they talk about it a lot, or they've come up with a lot of the story ideas together, because there's just certain beats and certain panels where you know that it was something that, oh yeah, they both had a laugh about this, or, you know, and it just seems to come through in the story, which I love about it.
Yeah, and in this case, there's a lot of that because I know Lucas well enough at this point that I'm like, oh yeah, Lucas is going to like this. And so there'll be things that, like, I'll call him up and I'm like, okay, demon larva. And, like, he'll get kind of quiet. And then a couple days later, I'll have this, like, amazing sketch of, like, demons crossed with tadpoles and, you know, and maggots and stuff like that. So a lot of that is, you know, a lot of that is the collaboration, and a lot of it is I write this book really heavily for him, and I'm always thinking, okay, you know, on the one hand, you know, what would Lucas really like to draw? And on the other hand, what would I really like to see Lucas draw? Because in a lot of cases, they're kind of the same thing. Nice. Like if I come up with something that I think is going to look absolutely amazing when he draws it, like he's, you know, it's usually something that he is really into drawing as well.
I think I just have the number one in front of me, and it was something that I mentioned when I had as my pick of the week, that sequence where in issue one, that guy's floating above the bed, and then that larvae starts growing out of his skin and then pops.
Mm-hmm.
I said that was one of the sickest things I've ever seen. Like, I've seen a lot of gross stuff in comic books, but, like, this actually made me a little bit queasy. It's that awesome panel in the middle where you see his nipple, and it's pushed in, and it's just all, like, veiny. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
What the hell's wrong with you, man?
And a lot of that is, I mean, like, you know, there's a number of reasons why that turned out that way. And some of it was, you know, I was looking at videos of people with, you know, with parasitic fly infections, and, you know, and maggots crawling out of people's skin. And, like, you know, that is something that there's a lot of things that I've become desensitized to on this project. There's a lot of stuff about, you know, medicine and biology and parasites and stuff that I don't even really blink at. And that's one of those things that I get really uncomfortable and I want to look away, and I don't let myself look away.
I'm definitely the same. Definitely the same.
Yeah. And then, and so I wrote that sequence and I wrote those specific beats, and then Lucas just really sold it. And then Sonny Go, our colorist on the first two issues, just absolutely nailed it. And, like, so each stage of the process, it just got, like, exponentially grosser, until I saw the final page. I was like, oh man, this is so great.
Was that your favorite part of issue one? Or
it was definitely one of my favorite parts. The first two issues, I was honestly, like, I was really uptight and nervous when I was writing the script. And it wasn't until 3 and 4 that I really started loosening up. And you can, like, I think you can really see that in the writing. It gets a lot, you know, it gets kind of looser. It gets more fun. There's more jokes. But yeah, issue one, I really liked how that sequence turned out. The reveal of the demon larva. And then I also, my other favorite sequence in there is when Dr. Morrow summons the adult demon into the jar. I just thought Lucas, like, you know, I knew that was going to look awesome, but I couldn't imagine how cool it was going to look. For one thing, like, the demon he designed was just absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
And it was honestly, like, we'd been talking about something, okay, so this is, you know, kind of the vague idea. And then he came back with something completely different. And I opened it and I was like, that's nothing like what I thought we'd agreed on. And it's so much better. So, yeah.
It's great when it happens that way.
It is. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm curious, man. There seems to be a lot of research put into the book. Like, you drop a lot of medical terms, but there's obviously a lot of different medical sort of layers at play. How much research do you have to put in to make that stuff all come together?
I've done a ridiculous amount of research the last few years. How much research I have to do in a given issue is, at this point, it's pretty small, but it's just because I've already packed all this stuff in my head. Like, by the time I come up with an idea for a Witch Doctor monster, like issues 3 and 4, the idea for, the fish people, like the Lovecraftian deep ones, sort of the medical twist in there. I knew what the medical twist was and sort of the story came out of that. And I did some additional like kind of supplementary research. But really at this point, we've been working on this for 4 years and I've just the entire time I've been reading books about medicine, biology, and parasites, and folklore. And it's all just like jumbled together in my head at this point.
I think it comes across really effectively. Like I don't feel like I need to read some sort of medical companion to keep up.
Okay, that's good, because that is a concern.
Yeah.
I think
everything sort of makes sense on the page. Okay, it's definitely sold while there. I want to know, like you mentioned before, like hand me a scalpel and Excalibur comes out. How many different sort of stand-ins do you have for different sort of medical things, like pulling up a chart and it's a scroll, stuff like that? Have you got a list of those sort of things you want to seed into the book?
I have some. Like there's definitely been some things that I sort of came up with, especially stuff that I came up with when I was first brainstorming for the project. And I was trying to, come up with, things where you were presented with something that you thought was like a magical thing, and then it turns out it's a medical thing. Or you're presented with something that looks like a medical thing, and then it turns out to be a magical thing. Like in the one shot that we've got coming out in December, the first page is, the first panel is the doctor slapping an X-ray up. But then if you read the dialogue, what he's doing is he's doing a tarot reading with X-rays. And so for the rest of the page, he's adding X-rays to this, and he's doing like the Celtic cross tarot reading. And he's explaining what each of the different X-rays means in this configuration. So there's a lot of stuff, a lot of ideas I've come up with that are kind of subverting people's expectations one way or the other with it.
That's pretty cool. I like that idea. With all of that research, do you have notebooks full of different things jotted down, or do you have like a file on your computer? How do you make that work?
I've got a bit of both. Like I've got a number of notebooks that are just, either mostly just ideas rather than research. And then I've got a big kind of research stack on my computer that I continuously adding stuff to. And then I've got separate ones for each of the different issues. Issue one, I think, of the ones that we've done so far, issue one was the one that I did the most kind of research out of hand, because I ended up reading, I read a bunch of books about demonic possession in sort of the Catholic context for that, because I wanted, I wanted the possession stuff to ring true. Like I didn't want to just do stuff out of The Exorcist. In that case, it kind of backfired because it turns out that The Exorcist was really heavily sourced on Catholic accounts of possession. So like pretty much everything that you see in The Exorcist is based on, Catholic exorcist lore. And it's kind of hard to find stuff in there that's, really, really eye-catching and awesome that wasn't already done in The Exorcist. So that's why like in the first sequence, the kid is vomiting scorpions that kind of disappear. That is something that is, there have been accounts of that in exorcisms by Catholic priests, of people vomiting scorpions or frogs or things that just kind of disappear.
Really?
Yeah.
That's nasty.
Those books, like one thing that I discovered early on in Witch Doctor was that I was way more interested in the books about like Ebola than I was in the books about like vampire folklore. And the one exception that I found so far is exorcisms. Like the stuff, like there's a couple of really good books about like exorcisms in the modern day Catholic Church. And it's just fascinating. So it's definitely stuff that I want to bring more, I want to explore that stuff more in this series.
You had mentioned earlier about the Lovecraftian influence in it. Was this something that is like the whole world is kind of steeped in that, or is that just something specific to the series as you were writing it to this first arc?
It's definitely like the Lovecraft stuff is really strongly in the backdrop. And part of that is because like Lovecraft was the first horror I really got into when I was in high school. It was like Lovecraft and Clive Barker. I've always been a really big science fiction fan, but I kind of came to horror and that kind of end of things a bit late. And so Lovecraft was like, you know, some of the first horror I really got into. And then the other aspect of that is that, you know, for me, part of what's really fun about Witch Doctor is it's this vehicle to kind of examine and warp basically everything in supernatural horror fiction. So like, you know, we've got, you know, the kind of cosmology that we've got vampires and trolls and heaven and hell and pantheistic gods and Lovecraft stuff. And we can kind of, you know, it's a way to have fun with all of it and then also kind of tie it all together. Kind of like the way that we did in issue 3, where you find out that, you know, vampires and everything are, you know, descended from creatures that were carried to Earth basically by the great old ones.
Right.
So that's kind of like, I really enjoy that kind of stuff.
Do you find it difficult to manage the rules that you have to kind of abide by in the setting, or it just comes naturally?
For me at this point, like I've internalized them so much that it comes pretty naturally. It's gotten, you know, progressively more and more hard for Lucas to make suggestions as far as like story stuff or as far as like monster stuff, because either I've already figured out, you know, generally what I want to do for something. Like you'll say, oh, we could do this with gods. I'm like, oh no, I want to do this, 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 and this with them. Or he'll be like, oh, we could do this thing with ectoplasm. I'm like, well, except that ectoplasm is already going to be this. For me at this point, like, there's definitely aspects of it that I forget about, and I'll be going back through my notes and I'll be like, this monster is this thing. Oh, that's so good. I forgot all about that. But by and large, I can keep, like, the only aspects that I have trouble kind of keeping straight are the ones that I haven't really figured out yet. Like, you know, magic, you know, how we were going to deal with magic was something that I kind of went around and around about for a long time. And I've gotten it more or less figured out at this point.
That always seems to be a really difficult one to nail down. I know in a lot of the settings that, you know, if I've, you know, on my own computer, I've got a bunch of files of projects that I want to do. And that's always the most difficult rule for me to figure out, because it can entirely change the style of the narrative depending on how you manage magic.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. And that's something that is chronically an issue with something like Doctor Strange, where the rules are really kind of hazy. And so you've got this character who can theoretically just do whatever the narrative wants him to do. And that's on the one hand, it's really easy for the writer. On the other hand, it's really bad for the story. So it's one of the things that we're going to be exploring more and that we've kind of touched on in the first miniseries is kind of the consequences of magic in Witch Doctor, which are, in this case, you know, it's very similar to the consequences of medicine, where if you got something like, you know, chemotherapy is this amazing thing that, you know, can, you know, if you got cancer, it can potentially kill you or cure you, but it can also kill you. I kind of gave away where I was going with that. and it's the same kind of thing. Like, I want to have the same kind of thing in Witch Doctor, where whenever you're doing magic, you know, whatever it is, there's some sort of repercussion, and that by and large, it's some sort of biological thing. Like, you know, if you've got magic sleeping pills and you take a magic sleeping pill and put somebody to sleep, like it gives you insomnia, you know, or that kind of thing.
Seriously, that's one of my favorite parts about this book is that idea. I just latched onto that because I've never seen it done before. And I think it's a really, really revolutionary idea. And that's what I really drawn to with the story. The rules actually make sense. And you're right. Like a lot of the stories of magic, it's like the characters that have kind of an unlimited potential. It's really hard to, not identify, but get invested when it's like, well, he can do anything. There's no danger. Yeah. Where I've never felt that way with Vince Morrow because, you know, he's a powerful guy, but there's very specific rules and there's limitations, and that makes him vulnerable.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, to me, that's very important. And I think it's part of why I like science fiction more than I traditionally like kind of fantastical things, is because, you know, I very firmly believe in the rules. There need to be some sort of, you know, limitations on a setting. And the more things that you have that your, you know, protagonist can do, honestly, the less kind of stories that you can tell. And that's something that, you know, Larry Niven, who's one of my favorite science fiction writers, he's talked about in the past about, you know, in his Known Space series of books, which is, you know, Ringworld and all the ones that are set in that universe, there's kind of, you know, a time period after which he can't really tell stories about anymore, because he's got so many different incredibly powerful inventions and devices that are commonplace, that it's very difficult for him to come up with a story that one of the things he's already introduced shouldn't just fix automatically. So that's definitely something that, you know, I do weigh whenever I introduce, you know, whenever I give Morrow a new power or a new device or whatever, I weigh, you know, are there stories I'm not going to be able to tell because we've already established that we've given him this.
Right.
Because I do want, like, I like my stories to make sense. I like, there's few things that are more of like a turn off to me in fiction than stories that don't make sense, where you're like, why did they just do that? Why didn't they do this? And I want to avoid that in my stories as much as possible.
I mean, that's one of the things that definitely drew me to the book, man. There's those concepts, there's those moments, and it's not the fact that you sit there and go, oh, that was cool. I'm not really after that. I sit with your book and I go, shit, that was smart. And that's that's what sets it aside from some other things. Because a lot of writers they'll write to the big cool moment and they won't earn it. And I know I write a lot about that in reviews that I do, where you have to earn certain beats, certain moments, certain aspects, certain concepts. And in Witch Doctor, it always feels like those things are earned because you have thought it through. And I mean, obviously, listening to you talk now, you do. You want it to make sense. You're invested in there being an intellectual backdrop on which you hang every character and every concept. And I think that, above most all things, that and probably the really sharp dialogue is what's making the book such a success.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
And that totally wasn't even a question. That was just me gushing. Nice.
Well, we kind of, I mean, the main thrust of our podcast is we talk about the writing process. So, you know, why don't you tell us a bit about your writing process? First of all, when you start a story, you know, not a Witch Doctor in specific, but anything, a comic script, what's the beginning of it for you? What's the origin?
For me, I haven't really done much that's not Witch Doctor, so it's kind of difficult for me to talk. Like, I can really easily talk about what my process is on Witch Doctor, but I'm sure it's going to be different when I start, writing comics that are not Witch Doctor for people who are not Lucas, which I've never had a single page of comics produced that wasn't drawn by Lucas. So, but yeah, as far as Witch Doctor goes, like, it all... Honestly, like, it all comes from the monsters originally, and the monsters come from the medicine stuff. So, like, in Witch Doctor, I will come up with, I'll start with a disease, or I'll start with a monster, and then I'll figure out what the parallel is. So, like, you know, if it's a disease, I'm looking at the traits, and I'm going, okay, well, this, you know, that kind of reminds me of vampires, that kind of reminds me of witches. I'll look at, okay, a vampire, like, what are the different aspects of a vampire? What are the parallels there that I can see in medicine, biology? And so I'll build this kind of, you know, I'll build a monster, and then I'll say, okay, so how would Morrow encounter this thing, and what would he do? And so usually anytime I come up with a monster, I end up coming up with at least like three or four different story ideas, built around it of, you know, a varying, you know, some are better than others, some are longer than others. Some are things that I could do, like, right now. Some are things that would, you know, are reasonably, I need to work towards it. Like, we need to earn that. And then just kind of go from there. My writing process is a little chaotic, and it's taken me a while to really get comfortable with that and to not feel like I was doing something wrong by not, you know, sitting down and writing, you know, this page, you know, okay, you know, page heading, panel, dialogue, panel, dialogue, panel, dialogue. I've tried that. I did that for the first two Witch Doctor issues. And then, like, for the third one, I just started writing fun dialogue and fun scenes and just random bits and then fleshed out from there, which is, you know, in retrospect, that's how I had written the first couple Witch Doctor stories. And it's a much more natural way for me to write. And I feel like the results are better. So yeah, for me, it's very much an additive process. Like I start with a couple ideas and then I flesh them out and they kind of spread. And, so there's a lot of, Scott Alley calls it cell division, which I really liked, where, you know, one idea splits into two ideas, which split into four ideas. And, you know, just keep kind of like working at that until you've filled in an entire story. And then like the writing the panels and the writing the dialogue is completely chaotic for me. Like I'll sum up a couple pages in the outline in a sentence or two, and then I'll get into a three or four panel sequence where I'm writing out, you know, meticulously writing out each panel and each bit of dialogue and all the pacing and everything, because I can see it really clearly in my head. So really it's like, you know, there's the bits that come easy, and then there's kind of making it all work as a whole, which, you know, of course is the hard part.
I like that concept of just writing out the scene. I mean, sometimes, yeah, you sit down and you start the page with, you know, panel one, and you've probably already got an idea of how the jigsaw will fit together. And sometimes you just need to know exactly what is going to happen in the scene. And as you write it, different things will evolve in the scene, and you'll work out whether it needs to be two pages or how you can break it down in panels after that. And I think some people don't let themselves get out of the rigid nature of scripting panels, and they get a little bit stuck, and that can stilt their work to a degree. So yeah. Do you think you're going to continue more writing it the way you're more comfortable with, like issue three, just sort of letting it flow out and then chopping it later, I guess?
Yeah, I think so. I definitely feel like, you know, everybody's got a way of writing that's easiest for them, that's most intuitive, that flows the best. And you know, I feel like that's something that you should really pursue. And then at some point you may need to break that up. You may need to try something different. But you know, especially early on when, you know, the blank page is your worst enemy. I think doing it, you know, the best way to do it is the way that works for you. And there's like, you know, there's the essay that David Mamet sent to the writing team on his TV show, The Unit, which has gone around a lot. Yeah. You guys have probably seen it. And like the answers, like all the answers to the questions in there, like he's got like a question section where, you know, but you ask, and I say, figure it out. Like that's the answer to the questions, is you figure it out.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, there isn't a shortcut. There's no one right way to do everything. There's no one approach that's going to work in every situation. You have to figure it out. And so that's something I've gotten a lot more comfortable doing over time.
And I see some people get confused at times, because a lot of people say if you want to write comics, read comic scripts, not so much comics. And I do believe reading comic scripts is really, really helpful, but you need to be eclectically selective in the little traits and tips that you will steal. You can't just read a script page from Ed Brubaker and just go, all right, that's what I'm doing, and I'm going to make it work for me. You need to be sort of true to your own process. And I think a lot of people sort of get hung up on saying, well, you know, Brandon said to do this, but then Greg Rucker said to do this, and now I don't know what's right and I don't know what to do, and my page is still blank, and they start sort of melting down. And in the end, however you write it is, I know people that will sketch the page and sort of fill in little balloons and stick figures, and then that will inform their script. And I know other people that work very rigid in the script. And in the end, as long as what you finish up with doesn't look like a big pile of shit and someone can understand it, you should be okay. And if people can be comfortable doing that, hopefully that'll work for them.
Yeah, fingers crossed. something that really screwed me up for a long time was I read Robert McKee's story, and he talks in there about how you should write the dialogue last, because the dialogue is, you know, it's the most superficial thing in any writing endeavor, and it's the easiest thing to get hung up on. And so quite frequently, if you write the dialogue too quickly, like too soon in the process, your revisions are just tweaking dialogue rather than worrying about, you know, does the structure that I've got actually work? Am I hitting the right beats? You know, are the characters doing what they need to do? And like, I really took that to heart, and I think there's a lot of truth in that. But for me, if I, you know, if I got a part of a story and I don't know how it's going to go, the only way I can easily get through that is to just sit there and write the dialogue that happens. I have to know what people are saying to know what they're going to be doing. And sometimes I end up, you know, after I've written all that, I just end up, you know, more or less throwing it all away once I've figured out what has to happen. But yeah, if I was strictly keeping myself to writing dialogue last, there would be scenes that would just be incredibly impossible for me to figure out. But it all comes down, like, I think it's fine to write dialogue early as long as you are able to remember that the dialogue is not the writing, just because it's the thing that, it's the really obvious thing on the surface that it's like, oh yeah, the writer did that. That's the part the writer did. And as long as you're able to kill your darlings in it and not just cling to things because you really like them, whether or not they actually work in the story, I think, you know, I don't think there's any problem with, you know, doing dialogue early.
Yeah, I could imagine.
When you sit down to actually physically start scripting, what kind of environment do you set yourself up in? Like, do you go to a coffee shop? Do you just hang out at home?
For me, I do a lot of work in coffee shops and other locations. Sometimes I'm better able to focus at home than others, but usually I can't do a lot of focusing when I'm at home. There's just too much other stuff that I could theoretically be doing in my apartment. Plus my apartment's, you know, it's kind of small and it's a bit dark. It's not that great for writing. So at this point I tend to go to the Starbucks down the street. I used to go to independent coffee shops because I like independent coffee shops and I don't really like Starbucks, but I found that the homogeneity of the sameness of the Starbucks, like, it actually helps me to focus. It's something that there isn't a lot of new stuff to distract me there.
It's a bland wallpaper,
exactly,
which Starbucks should go to.
So I need something bland, and I need something with kind of even fluorescent lighting, usually, especially like in the winters in Portland. So
that's interesting, because that fits Jeremy, our other host. He's a real coffee shop writer, whereas Kurt and I are a bit more, I guess, homebodies.
I see.
And we'd raised this before. You don't get distracted then by all the other people at the coffee shop?
I put my headphones in, and if people are distracting me, I tend to move to another part of the coffee shop. I mean, that does definitely happen. Like today, I went to the coffee shop and I tried to get some work done, and it's Black Friday, and I live like three houses down from one of the, you know, the biggest like shopping streets in Portland. And I didn't think about the fact that Starbucks was going to be absolutely packed all day by people who are shopping in this area. And so I went in and it was just a mess. It was hard to find a seat. There was stuff going on constantly. Like, there are people standing right behind me, and pretty quickly I was like, yeah, this isn't going to work.
So, I can only imagine someone at the other table trying to sip a coffee and looking across and seeing like some preview art, you know, things bursting open. And
that is a concern. Yeah. I do my lettering. I tend to do my lettering in that Starbucks. And I do have people who come over and are like, I'm sorry, what are you doing? Like, I couldn't help it, but open, like, because I also like the way that I do lettering, a lot of it involves zooming in as close as I possibly can. So you've got, you know, you've got you've got him shaking a baby and it's absolutely filling my screen. And you can read the text from across the room.
That's good viral marketing. I love it.
Yeah, it really is. I didn't know you actually lettered it. Was that something that just carried over from when you were doing it as like Ashcans, like self-published?
Yeah, that's exactly why. You know, somebody needed to letter it, and so I learned how to do it, and lettered our self-published ones, and then we started doing it in Image, you know, if we bring somebody in to letter it, that's an additional cost.
Yeah.
And so an Image has been, Skybound has been, you know, gracious enough to actually pay me as though I was, you know, a letterer being brought in on the project. So that's nice. That's the one money I can count on, is the money from lettering. The rest of it is, I mean, it's a creator owned comic. It's paid on the back end. So whether there's a profit or not, you know, is always a question. But I do, you know, I do get paid for lettering, which is good.
You mentioned slipping in the headphones. Is that a music you're listening to? Is there a soundtrack behind Witch Doctor?
I've certainly had soundtracks behind Witch Doctor at times. But at this point, it just tends to be whatever I can tune out, and yep, whatever fits the mood that I'm in that day. So the other day, actually, it was the soundtrack to Disney's The Jungle Book, which is
really
that's one of the weirder ones, because I've got Spotify, so like whatever I want to listen to is right there in Spotify. I was totally rocking out to The Jungle Book while I was doing some like planning documents the other day.
That's awesome.
But yeah, I did the soundtrack to Street Fighter 4 was in really heavy rotation last spring, because it's so pumped up and so energetic and exciting. And I found it was really helping me focus and helping me get into it.
That's awesome.
But yeah. And there's a lot of Tom Waits. Like Witch Doctor, there's a lot of Tom Waits.
Nice.
I could say that, definitely. That could work.
One of the things I was gonna ask you is the main character, Vince Morrow, is he based on David Tennant's Doctor Who at all? I'm sure you've heard this before.
I have heard it before. He's actually not. I started doing Witch Doctor a couple years before I saw any Doctor Who. And over time, you know, there's certainly, you know, as I've become a Doctor Who fan, you know, there's probably, if anything, there's more Stephen Moffat writing in there. Than there is necessarily, you know, David Tennant Doctor Who. There's a lot of the BBC Sherlock that Moffat does is actually a bigger.
Oh, it's so good.
Oh my God, it's so good. So yeah, there's a lot of, after I saw that, like I kind of like, you know, Benedict Cumberbatch became one of the actors that I'd like to see play Morrow in.
Oh yeah, that'd be deadly.
Wherever, yeah. I think one of the things that has been really interesting about doing this project is that it's turned out to be sort of a Rorschach test for influences. A lot of people see a lot of things in it. Like a lot of people, like some people, I think there was one day where I saw, you know, some commenter who was like, you know, it's Witch Doctor is basically a Hellboy ripoff. And then I saw somebody else somewhere else online who was like, well, Witch Doctor is basically a Doctor Who ripoff. And they were both like, but it's really good and I like it.
Oh, well, I guess that's a good addendum.
So, yeah. There have been other people who are like, well, they're the influence of, you know, this thing that Brandon's never read is very clear. And I'm like, really? Okay.
You know, I had that happen to me in Seattle at Emerald City Comic Con this year. I wasn't there at the table, but for Intrepids came out, and this like person came up, I guess, and said, you do know that scene like with the cyber bear is pretty much ripped out of Dark Tower, Stephen King's Dark Tower novel series, right? And I was like, I'd never read it. And Scott was all in a panic. He's like, oh crap, we're going to get sued. I'm like, dude, I don't think so. If anything, it's just an homage, man. That's how we'll paint it as, but you get that all the time. People see what they want to see, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, it's the whole, you know, nothing new under the sun thing.
Yeah.
And that's something that I've noticed. That's something I've gotten really used to. Since I started coming up with comics ideas is other people coming up with the exact same goddamn idea right as I'm about to start something. So like Witch Doctor, we self-published the first issue in April 2008. And then at San Diego 2008, one of the indie publishers announced a book that was about this jerk doctor who's investigating the biology of the supernatural. And
what?
Yeah, and it was very clear, like it was not, the time frame was such that they had to have been working on it at the same time that we were working on ours. Like, it was very clear that they weren't ripping us off. It was just somebody else got the exact same idea at the same time that we did. And then I saw an interview with one of the creators who, you know, they described, you know, the backstory of the comic and the backstory of the protagonist. And I'm reading it and I'm like, that's every single goddamn thing I've been planning on doing in Witch Doctor and haven't told anyone. And in that case, like, when I saw that, I was like, why is that? Because I've been going for the cliches. You know, I've been going for the obvious ideas, and that made it, you know, very much easier for somebody else to come up with something very, very similar. So, yeah, I actually like that same convention, or actually a better example would be, I had this story about this historical figure named Jean Lafitte, who was the Pirate King of New Orleans. And I had this story because I'd gone to New Orleans and I read a bunch about him. And I was like, wouldn't it be awesome if he teamed up with this other historical figure who was also in New Orleans at that time and he probably knew? And I was like, I should totally write that story. And then like a year later, Boom announced Galveston, which was a story about Jean Lafitte, the Pirate King of New Orleans, teaming up with the guy who invented the Bowie knife. It was, you know, another historical figure of the same time period who he actually was friends with. And I was like, really?
You'd think that one would be obscure enough.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, I had no idea that I was like tapping into some zeitgeist about Jean Lafitte team up comics. But apparently.
That's amazing.
So, yeah. Yeah.
And people will always draw parallels. I mean, as Kurt just said with the Dark Tower thing, I've read both Dark Tower and Intrepids, and it's not really – it's a bear with cybernetics. This is about as close as it gets. I mean, I can remember reading a review in a magazine of somebody saying, what's this X-Men movie? Is it about a special school with an old headmaster and they've got special powers? Harry Potter ripoff, hello. And I was like, you serious? Like, you're a dickhead. Like – There are always going to be similar tropes. Like there's only so many different stories you can tell. And as far as I'm concerned, if you tell the story well, I'll read it. I don't care if it's similar to something else. I don't care if you can easily draw a line between some of it and something else. You write it well and it interests me, that's what'll grab me.
Yeah. And that's increasingly where I've become over time. Trying to being a writer for a few years has really pointed out to me how referential everything is and how easy it is to come up with the same ideas as everybody else. And it's really pointed out to me, it's really pointed out the value of, you know, a good story well told, whatever the inspiration is. I can enjoy Harry Potter and Books of Magic, even though, yeah, you know, they look like the exact same character. You know, they're very different things and they're both very well told and they are, you know, very different from each other. So it's the same kind of thing. Like I was, you know, the book that got announced that was very similar to Witch Doctor. I was going to read it when it came out. Like I was going to buy it, just because I knew. I was like, well, you know, they've got a lot of the same kind of conceptual stuff, but I know just because I've had my entire brain sunk in this research for several years now, I know we're going to be coming up with completely different stuff than they are. So I was more worried. I was not very worried about it kind of stepping on our toes. I was more worried about, you know, kind of public perception. Because it's very easy to, think that one thing is a ripoff of another, no matter when the two things came out. Anyway.
If people use their brains, they'll move past it.
Yeah.
You hope.
Yeah.
So I guess here, like, we're coming up to the end of the podcast. What else do we got coming from you in the next year? What's 2012 looking like?
We've got another Witch Doctor one-shot that's coming out in December. And then sometime in the first half of 2012, we're going to have a second Witch Doctor miniseries, which I'm looking forward to.
Excellent.
So besides that, I've got some other stuff that I'm developing. And I've got I've got one project that's gotten a green light at a publisher that hasn't been announced yet, and I can't really talk about it. And then I've got some other stuff that I'm developing. But it's very, like, this year, like, 2011 for me was trying to figure out how to do the first Witch Doctor miniseries while, you know, juggling my day job and my other commitments and stuff. And that turned out to be a lot more mental energy than I expected and did not leave me open to developing other stuff and getting other irons in the fire the way I hoped. So 2012, I'm really hoping will be me branching out and me getting other projects going other places. And, you know, potentially other ones at Skybound as well. So yeah.
That's awesome to hear that it's spiraling out, man. If you ever need us to drop some names on here, or you want to come back and discuss future projects, we'll definitely have you on.
All right, awesome, yeah.
Well, Brandon, man, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting with you. So thanks heaps for your time. It's nice to hear yet another writer that has yet another slightly different process, and I think that's something these Sensation Spectaculars are doing really well. They're showing us that everyone's just that little bit different, and yet there's a variety of these successful books that we're all digging. So thanks for sharing it with us, man.
Yeah, no problem. I really appreciate you guys having me on.
Never, ever a problem. Now, for all you listeners at home, go out and check out Witch Doctor. Absolutely. Like, you've heard us talk about it before on the pod. You've heard Brandon talk all about it now. It's a book that you sort of have to get to get. You know, I mean, we've talked about the shaking babies, and we've talked about things exploding with pus, and there's those moments, but there's also such eloquence in the dialogue, and as I've mentioned, it's such a smart book. It's one of those books where it makes you want to go on and do something else of your own, and usually that's research different things. It'll make you want to get on the net and try your Google foo and see what you can find out about actual vampire mythology or how this medico-realism sort of fits into it. And so when you can find a book, people, that makes you push yourself into other directions and makes you learn, but also makes you experience, makes you feel, makes you enjoy, it makes you, guys, it makes you. So you've got to go out there, you've got to grab Witch Doctor in there. We don't say that just because Brandon's on the line. We don't say that because he's got a gun to Kurt's head. We say that because it's the truth. And hopefully a lot of people will, you know, give us a shout out on Facebook and let us know what you thought of the book, or hit us up on Twitter, because we're pretty certain you will enjoy the book. So for now, it's been emotional. It's been certainly enlightening. And we hope everybody else enjoys the rest of their day as much as we will. Thanks and good night.